Well, hello. How are you? I'm great. Thanks for asking. Welcome to another fantastic episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. There's a long-running joke here at EE Journal that it's actually a requirement that every keynote speech at every conference on the planet start with a graph of Moore's Law. And yes, since we're audio only, I guess this is where you'll have to imagine that slide. And yes, my friends, we're starting things off with the very foundation of our industry, Moore's Law. But not just any Moore's Law, no. We're talking about the next phase of Moore's Law and where we're going from here. Please welcome Tom Smelker from Mercury Systems.
My guest today is Tom Smelker from Mercury Systems. Thank you so much for joining me, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're at the Embedded Tech Trends show, and you presented a session called The End of Moore's Law, High-Performance ICs Through Modular Chip Design. I think everyone listening to my broadcast will know all about Moore's Law, but you say we've moved into the next phase of Moore's Law. So tell me more about that.
Absolutely. So if you think about Moore's Law, it's about the doubling of transistors by every phase and at the same cost. And if you look back at time, when we hit 14 nanometer, the cost per transistor actually went up. So we are now in a new phase, and the cost to innovate for the smaller and smaller tech nodes is becoming more expensive. So if you look at the trend, we are slowing. We're not on that 18th month cadence we were used to for 40 some years. Yeah. So how do you do that? Now you do that with heterogeneous solutions.
Okay, so you mentioned that a modular chip design is going to be the way to go. But Tom, what kind of real advantages from an engineering point of view are we looking at with this approach?
Well, think about it. If for the last 20 years, we've been designing chips with ever more complexity and ever more capability, moving things that were on the circuit card into the chip. So what's happened now is they take a lot of power and performance for all systems. Even if you're not using all those capabilities, you're using the power of those capabilities. You're using the size of what's there. So the next phase is really bringing down chiplets and chipsets that are focused for the specific application and right-sizing the computing solution in a modular way for that application.
Okay, so let's circle back to Mercury Systems for a sec. How are you guys in particular taking on this challenge?
Well, since we're focused on defense, we're focused on the trusted side of it as well. So we are actually building what we call 2.5D fab in onshore in the United States, where we'll be able to take different chipsets from different semiconductor companies and different defense companies and integrate those into very small packages using a silicon interposer. So that allows our customers to have the leading edge technologies for their applications. So think of us as being a channel from the semiconductor industry into defense.
Okay. You also mentioned that open systems architecture is going to be the next step in this movement. So let's talk more about that.
Today, we have no standards on the chip-to-chip interfaces. We have different protocols out there, but no standards. So it's expensive for innovative companies to come up with a chiplet, and it works in one realm, and then they have to redesign it just for the interfaces to work in another. So if we had open standards where innovative companies could design their unique IP in, say, artificial intelligence, security, you name it, photonics, if it's standardized, then they can rapidly get those capabilities out to integrators like us and create a marketplace for it.
Now, a lot of this can be attributed to processing all the way to the edge, right? Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Exactly. So edge computing is the driver behind a lot of this heterogeneous computing and modular solutions. So if you think automotive, you think defense sensors, being able to put the processor right next to the sensor enables us to collect the data from the sensor, process it and get it to where it needs to go. Today, we have what's called data bottlenecks. And so we can't actually get the data to where the processors are. This will totally revolutionize many industries as having the processing capability operating on the data where the data is.
All right, Tom, it is time for your off-the-cuff question now. You have one last meal on planet Earth. That's it. One last thing you're going to eat. What would it be?
That's a great question. I would have to say it would have to be a ribeye steak, a nice, thick, prime, dry-aged ribeye steak.
Any fixins to go along with this? You got the side salad, the baked potato.
Loaded baked potato with everything. Got to throw the bacon on there because it's good with everything.
Excellent. And now I'm super hungry. Thanks. All right, Tom. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Let's keep going with this innovation acceleration, shall we? Next up, please welcome Mark Littlefield and Dr. Mohammed Burgak from Contron. We're talking about deep learning model acceleration, including algorithmic acceleration and hardware acceleration.
Hi, Mohammed. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so let's talk about acceleration for AI. Now, AI model from data center to the edge. Let's talk about that workflow. What does that really look like?
Okay, when we talk about AI on the edge, it's mainly about size and weight and power, and also about acceleration and the idea to run just only inference. When we talk about AI on the data center, it's mostly training and developing your AI, making it better. When we would like to take the AI from the data center to the edge, we need to adapt first. We need to remove all the parts that wasn't necessary for inference. All the parts that are specifically for training, we need to remove them. We need to reduce the precision of our algorithms. And then we need to put it on a format that is easily usable by inference program, our output application that will be running on the edge. Those parts needs to be done sometimes automatically, sometimes by hand or by engineered solutions.
So deep learning model acceleration includes algorithmic acceleration and hardware acceleration. So let's start with that first one. What exactly is algorithmic acceleration?
It's a good question. Algorithmic acceleration is basically is the use or the human ingenuity, how we can make our algorithmic smarter from an implementation point of view, instead of, for example, doing the task multiple times on things that you already did, you can do some reuse. This is type of algorithmic optimization that you can do. And this field is a big field of research, and every day you have more than 25 papers on that field. And there are multiple ways to do it. The classic ones is to use optimization on the convolution side. And there are multiple ways. You can do atrous convolution, one-by-one convolution. You can do also some optimization on that using FFTs or using a Winograd. This is on the computation side. There is also another portion is portion of the structure of your neural network. You may need to be also optimize that network instead of being a huge brute force set of convolutions. You may add some skip connections. You may add some smaller then bigger. The architecture by itself, it's something that is active field of research and needs to be looked at. Right now, the best way to do that is last couple of years showed good results is AutoML or NAS network architecture search. And this is like, I think the game now on that side is over for human. It's mostly developing neural network that will find the best architecture that the network will be done. It's like a meta network that will learn how to design another network that optimize for X or Y architecture.
So let's talk about that hardware acceleration. Now, Mohammed, what are the key points we should think about when it comes to hardware in this space?
Okay, on the hardware space, it's like right now there is like proliferation of hardware accelerators. It's like a huge amount of hardware and it's easy to be confused on that. Main thing, you need to have a good understanding of what are the categories. We can say there are like CPUs, GPUs, FPGAs, and ASIC We can call it as a custom accelerators. On the CPU side, we need to be careful what is the portion that is needed to be executed with that. CPUs are very good on serial workloads. In my opinion, we should not target the CPU as an accelerator. The second part is GPUs. GPUs are the actual accelerators that everybody is using because they are highly parallel, but the efficiency on those ones is not that good. The average utilization of a GPU, it's about 30% of usage, and all other portions of it is sitting idle waiting for data, basically. Third option is FPGAs or custom ASICs. Those ones, it's a wild west right now. Yep. We need to be careful on choosing one in particular because there are some that they are lacking for very important piece of operations. For example, there are some they can't do division, or there are some that are lacking some operations. If you are lacking operations like that, then you will need to implement these operations by the CPU, and then you will have a back and forth, and it will not be a very viable product for you. The other thing we need to be looking for is also the software support or software ecosystem. It's very, very important. I know a lot of accelerators, they have very poor software support, and then how you convert your model, it's basically you need to rewrite everything from scratch. And those are key points to keep in mind.
Hi, Mark. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So what specifically is Contron doing in this space?
So Contron is a fundamental products provider. You know, we do SBCs, switches, fundamental things. We don't do application space work. Our customers do that. But what we do provide is good architectures that support those kinds of applications. So we make sure that our products are well-balanced I/O-wise, storage-wise, that the physical architecture, the computing elements in the I/O is all well-balanced to make sure that our customers then have a good, stable platform to work from. And then we work with like Intel and other vendors to make sure that their tools are compatible with us and so on. So that's kind of where we play. The last thing we do provide, though, is some guidance with our customers. Oftentimes, our customers are as new as everybody else is to this kind of space. And so we've got people like Mohammed who can help guide them and say how best to use our products in solving their problems.
All right, Mohammed, it's time for your off-the-cuff question now. You have one last meal on planet Earth. That's it. You're going to eat one last thing for the rest of your life. What would it be?
Couscous, Moroccan couscous.
Okay.
This is will be my last meal.
Excellent, and I think that's the first couscous answer I've had. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Mohammed.
Thank you very much for having me. Thanks.
And thank you, Mark, for joining me.
Oh, hey, it's my pleasure.
Keeping with our acceleration theme this week, how about we accelerate our micro air vehicles? I mean, it's about time, right? In this week's news you may have missed, we're talking about the future of micro air vehicles and how it may have just changed course. Okay, to clarify, micro air vehicles are a class of miniature UAV that can be autonomous and as small as 5 centimeters. So think insect-sized aircraft. Well, one of the biggest design challenges with micro air vehicles is their power source. You want a power supply that's big enough, but not too big, so it doesn't even make it off the ground. Right? But a team from China's Changzhou and Jingzhou universities may have just fixed this with their sun-powered flapping wing. So this flexible bio-butterfly wing, as they call it, is actually designed using a thin polymer sheet that has been covered with nano-crystalline metallic film, and is laid out horizontally so that one end is secured to a fixed support and the other is free to move around. So, when sunlight, simulated in the case of this study, was shown onto the bio-butterfly wing, the temperature of the polymer sheet and the film heated up and expanded. And because the polymer actually expands more than the metal on top, the wing curls upward and inward. When the wing is all the way up, the curved section actually cools the rest of the wing using its inherent shade and causes it to flatten back out. So basically, this device can curl up and down, thus creating a flapping motion, which is, get this, faster than an actual butterfly's wings. What? So, no actual robots have yet to be created using this prototype technology. But it's awfully promising, right? So, if you want to check out even more information about this flexible bio-butterfly wing, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, including a video of it in action and a link to a white paper about the research called Sunlight-Driven Continuous Flapping Wing Motion. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, it is AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, hosted by yours truly. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I particularly love pinball. Just FYI. Shoot me a line at Amelia@EEJournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of February 21st, 2020, I'm Amelia Dalton. And you've been fried.